Om Akinatimananda Syad Janadzana Salakaya Chaksu Samilatanjana Tasmai Sri Ravenama Sri Taitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupakazamayam Dadati Sapnantikam Vansukapratubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. So nice to be sitting here with you and chanting Hare Krishna again. Me too. I am also thinking like that, that I was, because it's so nice to chant with you. Well, really.
The trick was that since we saw you for sometimes there, our thirst just increased. It's not sati.
But I was feeling the same thing. Because the really, the Krishna consciousness movement is to teach us all where our shelter is. And that we should use our life properly to find that shelter. Because we all, not we all, but there is a tendency for a conditioned soul, or what it means to be a conditioned soul, it means that we seek our shelter in matter. What does the word shelter mean? What's the Hebrew word for shelter?
Miklat.
What does it mean? When you think of shelter, what do you mean? There's also a Hare Krishna band shelter, but not that one. But that's what that protection. What else? Yeah. What good? Safety. Confidence. Yeah. What else? Love. Yeah. Happiness. All. What?
Warm.
War, you enter
shelter. Oh, yeah, shelter, yes. But why do you enter the shelter during war?
Because
yeah, because everyone is terrified, afraid in a war. Because no matter how strong we are in a war, especially the way wars are fought nowadays, it's terrifying. And when there is terror means that everything that we think of as our shelter proves to be not a worthy shelter. And therefore, war is terrifying. Just for that reason, because it shows us our house, our family members, our strength, our intelligence, the strength of our mind, what we know, our bodies, they are all very fragile. And this is proved in a war because we are confronted with the possibility of death. And we see when we are confronted with death in a circumstance like that, that actually in the material world we have no shelter. We think so many things our shelter, but actually they are not shelters at all. We think of our family members, our friends, our children even, our money. Of course, money is considered the greatest shelter by people. And actually, of course, obviously, it is no shelter. But we think of it like that. We think of our bodies like that. We think of our strength as a shelter, something that's going to protect us. But actually, none of these things can give us protection. And the material world is designed to continuously confront us with the reality that there is no shelter in the material world, and we try to set up again and again fallible things. Pashanapina Pashyati, fallible things, we try to set them up as our shelter. And again, the material world shows us that they cannot actually give us shelter. When there is a war, we're terrified. Again, the same point. Because that which we consider the ordinary things that give us shelter, they turn completely useless. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach and what Srila Prabhupada came to teach was, do not take shelter of anything in the material world. Rather, we should make Krishna our shelter. What does it mean to make Krishna our shelter? That's on one side. And therefore so much of the preaching that we do is that this is bad and this isn't going to help you and don't become a materialist and don't do this and look at the material world and this and don't trust these things. So we should not take our shelter in the material world. Yes? And what else? Huh? Yes, this is the essence of shelter. Is protection. And the essence of surrender is to place oneself under the protection of Krishna. Now, where do we usually, or you can answer this question individually, personally, privately, and silently. Where, when you're in difficulty, where do you go for shelter? We have to learn. We have to learn to call out to Krishna when we're in difficulty. This is what it means to surrender. No matter how many problems we have, no matter how bad we are. None of these things make any difference. No matter how strong we are, no matter how weak we are, no matter how rich we are, no matter how poor we are, no matter how intelligent we are, no matter how beautiful we are or ugly we are or old or young, this is the lesson that the material world will relentlessly teach us, that there is no shelter in matter. And that's what the material world will teach us. And then what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna himself teach us in Srila Prabhupada is that Krishna is our shelter. What verse from the Bhagavad Gita tells us to take shelter of Krishna?
Masucha.
Yeah, don't worry, Masucha means. But Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Only take shelter of me. Sharanam means take shelter. We use the word surrender. Sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam bruja. Surrender means, that word isn't a very nice word in English. What is it in Hebrew? What does it mean? Yes, okay. Put your hands up. If you don't put your hands up, we're going to shoot you. All right, Krishna, don't shoot me. I'll do what you want. Don't shoot me, please. But that in one sense is what we do if we're fortunate. Okay, Krishna, I've had enough with the material world. Krishna, my hands are up. I won't protect myself. I'm in your hands. But Sharanam means more than that too. It means returning to our natural position for the shelter that we're longing for. that is actually our natural shelter, returning to that natural shelter. Because now, Krishna bhule se jeev anadya bahimukh. We have turned our back on Krishna. And what sharanam means, or surrender, or shelter, is turning towards Krishna. And this is what Prabhupada's pranam mantra is meant to tell us. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamine Tanamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharane Nivisesha Sunyavadi Prashkatya Dezatarane. The Prabhupada, in that pranam mantra, the second one, he's saying that he's the servant of Saraswati, of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has gone to preach in the West, which is so full of impersonalism and voidism. There's such a tendency, because the material world is so relentlessly difficult, there's such a tendency to, practically speaking, not want to exist anymore. Just because of the nature of the material world, we just get so tired of the suffering of material life that all I care about is to stop the suffering or cease to exist. But Prabhupada especially wished to tell us, and he was relentless on this point, that the absolute truth, Krishna, is not neither impersonal nor void. There is a wonderful person, the most wonderful person, who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a person, he's a person, he's a person. What does it mean to be a person? He can love. Yes. What else? We know he has form. Yeah.
His eye.
What were you saying? Odoi?
He cares.
He's a person.
He's I.
He is I?
I am.
I am what I am.
That's the essence of the personality.
Oh, that feeling of self. I am.
I'm self.
Yes.
Because all the different relations or emotions are connected to the I.
Yes. So Krishna is that. Krishna is the supreme I. Yes. What else?
He exists.
So what are the characteristics of a person? You're all. Every one of us are people. So what are your characteristics? Think about it. What do you like, what you don't like, what you want to avoid, what pulls you closer to someone? Think about it. What makes you trust someone? Huh? Yes?
Charm.
Krishna, yes. Yes. So what pulls you closer to someone is their charm? What do you mean by that? Sweet. Yeah. Okay, so when we think, usually we think that, okay, Krishna is a supreme person, so he's going to be, how do you say sweet in Sanskrit? Madhu. Yes. Madhuram. But we're attracted to the sweetness. Let's talk about that. We want Krishna to be. We want to know about Krishna's sweetness, so we become attracted to him. But let's turn that around. Krishna will become attracted to us when we become sweet to him. And that's what bhakti is, to start acting sweetly to Krishna. Instead of trying to become satisfied in the material world, getting all the sweetness for ourselves, but trying to become sweet to Krishna, making the center, finally making the center Krishna and not me. And why are we dissatisfied in this world? Because no one, why is everyone's relationships in the material world so difficult? Because we think no one is treating me sweet enough. But really, is the reason why we're dissatisfied in the material world is because we're not treating Krishna sweet enough. How many times a day do we think, what can I do to make Krishna happy? Something so simple. And that is what bhakti is. What can I do to make Krishna happy right now? How many times? Raise your hand if you thought like that one time today. Wait, yes, very good. Thank you. But yes, that's what Krishna consciousness is about. To change the whole way we think from me-centered to Krishna-centered. This is what Krishna consciousness is about. And that's what bhakti is, to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Now how to do that? What will please Krishna? That is why we study Shastra, to learn what will please Krishna. And what does please Krishna? It is when we love Him, basically. There's a famous little story from the Mahabharata when Krishna went to see, on behalf of Yudhisthira Maharaj, Krishna went to see Duryodhana because the Kauravas, headed by Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, they were determined to take the entire kingdom from the Pandavas. And the Pandavas were warriors. And they said, please, there's only one thing we do. We're Kshatriyas, we're administrators, we have to rule. Give us at least 5 villages. There are 5 of us. Who are the 5 Pandavas? The eldest is? Next? Bhim. Next? Arjuna. Then? Nakula and Sahadev. Now, 5 rulers, and these persons were qualified to rule the world, and they're asking Duryodhana, just give us 5 small villages so we can at least rule that. That is what we do. We rule. Give us something to rule, and then we'll be satisfied. And what was Duryodhana's reply? I cannot spare enough land for you, even that you, I can put a needle through, which isn't very much land. So he was so, how, just think about that. If someone's, you have the world at your disposal, and the world is yours, and someone said that, someone, your cousins, your dear relatives, ask you for something so little, 5 villages, and you cannot even spare enough land to put a needle through. Just imagine what the heart of such a person is like. What is it like? Hard, like stone, and it's closed and tight. And who said envy? Yeah, envious. Not anything for you. I hate you. Yeah, that's what it is. I want you dead. It's so envious, so jealous of these Pandavas. And actually, the root of that, of his envy towards the Pandavas, was his envy of Krishna. And Vidura said this. He said, you get rid of this Duryodhana. He is the personification of envy. He is envious even of Lord Krishna. And that is all our position, actually. We're all envious of Krishna, and that's why we're in the material world. We can't tolerate the fact that He is God and I'm not. I'm not the center of existence. He is. So anyway, the Pandavas were very, very noble. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his serving the Pandavas, he went to Duryodhana as their messenger. And he said, we want to make peace. And Duryodhana had a different plan. He wanted to bring Krishna onto his side. So what he did was he cooked a big, big, big feast, because when you feed someone, they become very satisfied when you feed them nicely.
And obliged.
So he cooked a big feast, and Krishna, come, we'll talk after. Now you sit down and eat. Look what we've cooked for you. And Krishna would not eat anything cooked by Duryodhana. He had no appetite for that. And he walked out of Duryodhana's assembly. And Duryodhana tried to capture him and bind him. And Krishna just laughed and displayed his universal form, or part of his universal form. That the whole universe and the demigods are under my control, and you're such a rascal, you want to tie me up and capture me and put me in jail. And Krishna immediately left that assembly, and he went to the house of Vidura, who was his devotee. And Vidura was not there, but his wife was there, and she was a devotee. And Krishna hadn't eaten, so he was very hungry. So he said to the wife of Vidura, please give me some food, I'm hungry. Because he wouldn't eat the food of Duryodhana. And of course, remember, this is Krishna. This is the supreme, all-opulent, Sat-Ashwarya-Purna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, acting in such a way that will teach us something, that will captivate our minds and our hearts, that will fill us with sweetness. So he said, I'm so hungry, give me something to eat, please. And she said, oh Krishna, there's nothing at all in the house, I haven't cooked yet. And he said, is there anything you can give me? I'll eat it. She said, all we have is some bananas. Please give me the bananas. And she was such a devotee. She was in such ecstasy because Krishna had come when he was hungry. He had come to her house. Her house. There are hundreds and thousands and millions of people who wish, devotees, who want to offer something to God, but he had come there, to the house of Vidura, begging for food, insisting that she feed him now. And this beautiful, beautiful person, Krishna, who was all attractive and all sweet, was standing before her, saying, give me bananas, because I'm so hungry. And in her ecstasy, what was she doing? She was peeling the bananas, throwing the banana away, and handing the peels to Krishna. And Krishna was eating them. Because she was ecstatic in her offering. And she made Krishna eat banana peels. Because what Krishna, all Krishna is interested in is that, yes, is bhakti, that we give him something with a desire to please him. And even if we do something wrong or make a mistake, if our desire is simply to please him, then he will accept that and purify whatever we do. So this is what bhakti means. And this is why bhakti gets at the heart of our material existence, and why karma and jnana and yoga do not. Because the heart of our material existence is that I think of myself as the center. And this is called maya, or illusion. Because we are not the center of existence. right? Is anyone here the center of existence? Who will admit it? Are you the center of existence? But we think like that. It's obvious we're not, because there's millions and billions of people. Huh?
That person that you know and recognize.
Recognizes that we're not.
Yeah. No one recognizes that we are. No, unfortunately,
we
are the center.
Yes. No one agrees with us that we're the center, because everyone thinks that I'm the center. Not you, it's me. So this is illusion. Maya. Maya means that which is not, and this is the central point of illusion. And we have turned our back on Krishna and imagining that we are the center, which is obviously crazy. So bhakti gets at the very heart. Karma doesn't, jnana doesn't, yoga doesn't. It gets the heart. Therefore Kapila Muni explains that bhakti dissolves this false, the subtle body, the subtle covering over the soul, because it places gradually or quickly, depending upon our advancement, our sincerity, it places us in the right perspective with reality, that we are Krishna's servants, that we are not the center, that He is the center. I am the servant of the servant of the servants of the servants of Krishna. I'm a servant only, a servant of Krishna. And when we deny that we're servants of Krishna, we end up serving everything else and everyone else and becoming more and more miserable. So what does it mean to become a servant of Krishna? It means that we accept, we place Krishna's pleasure before our own. That's what it means to be a servant. How can I please Krishna? So this is what we have to study. What will be pleasing to Krishna, and act in such a way that Krishna is pleased. This is something to think about and meditate about, as we all will speak here, and then we'll talk for a while, we'll eat a little prasadam, and then we'll all walk out the door and we'll go out different ways. But whatever ways we go, and we all are individuals and we have different engagements in life, and just look around, there are so many different things that people do here, even in this one room. And if we all, so we do different things, but if we just adopt one principle, there's a common element in that, and that's the element that makes us aspiring devotees, is that we're aspiring to place Krishna in the center, aspiring to act to please Him. We may not be able to do it perfectly, but that's our aspiration. So we think, what will please Him? What will please Krishna now? I'm walking down the street, what will please Krishna? Everything. I'm chanting, what will please Krishna? I'm working, what will please Krishna as I'm working? I'm driving, what will please Krishna? Is this easy to do or difficult? It's very difficult, because we're so habituated to keeping, for me to keep me in the center. I want to do what's pleasing to me. But this is what's pleasing to me. Pleasing Krishna is what's pleasing to me. Just like, what's the example given in the third canto of the Bhagavatam? Yeah, there's two examples in one verse. One is this, if all the limbs are satisfied when the food is placed in the mouth, if the sun, and the other is that watering the root of the tree automatically waters the leaves. We're like the leaves, and Krishna is like the root. So if we water the root, if we place our energy into pleasing Krishna, then we, the leaves, become satisfied. Now what doubt deeply comes into the mind when we think like this? Or we can enthusiastically say, yes, from now on I'm going to please Krishna. But what doubt comes in the mind? Who said that? Yes. Yes. Am I really going to be taken care of? Will I really become satisfied by pleasing Krishna? Will I really be protected if I please Krishna and don't take care of myself? And as soon as we think like that, there is a separation from Krishna. A wall comes. So the mission of a devotee is to find the answer to that question. Because we can't become devotees until we find the answer to that question. And the Krishna can say it in the Bhagavad Gita, the person giving a class can say it, we can read about it, but unless we find out for ourselves the answer to that. If I try to please Krishna, well, what about me? Unless we can say that, yes, that I will be taken care of. And what's it called when we actually trust that? Huh? Yeah, but one step before that. That's before surrender. Another word for trust?
Faith.
Shraddha. Shraddha is the requirement for bhakti for that reason. So we... Yes, we have to find out. So how do we find out? How do we develop this? We hear Shastra. This is what's recommended, actually. Hearing Shastra. Bhakti Shastras. And then we try. We try and see if Krishna actually protects us. Has anyone in this room ever had an experience that Krishna ever protected you? Yes?
You want... Sometimes we think...
Wait, before we get the other side, I wanted Krishna to do this and he didn't do it. But
no,
first we want to hear about one time Krishna protected us.
Yeah.
And then you can go next.
Yes.
You want...
No, that's what everybody has this kind of experience in almost every day, but what does it mean to protect? In fact, whenever we have, like, I know, and every day when we have some dilemma, some questions, some difficulty, when we turn to Krishna, we always get some kind of answer.
And why do we doubt?
We forget.
That's what Maya does. It makes us forget. But is that true? Is that every day, many times a day, we have this experience that Krishna protects us? Some of us. I would like to say that if we have the experience, we may have the experience that many, many, all day long, instead of Krishna protecting us, Krishna forgets us. And if we have that experience, that I would say perhaps we are forgetting Krishna. And Krishna... There's one verse, we were talking about this today, there's one verse from the third canto of the Bhagavatam that Vidura says, not Vidura, but Uddhava says to Vidura, Oho pakyam stanakalakutam jigham siyat shadbiritadbi lebhegatim datri visito tatoyam Kamba dayalum sharanam brajema. That There was once a whole Pakayam Stana Kalakutam. There was once a witch, Paki means witch, named Putana. And she came to Krishna with her breast covered with poison, Stana Kutam. Jighamsi Adyad Yapi Svadhi. And she tried to kill Krishna. Now we know the story of what happened, that Krishna sucked her breast when he was just, this was when he was 3 months old, but he killed her at that time. She came to him disguised as someone who wished to feed him in a motherly way, but actually what she was trying to do was kill him. And Krishna killed her, but lebhegitim datri uchitam tatonyam. But how did Krishna reciprocate with her attempt to kill him, disguised? Disguised, she came to kill him disguised as a nurse. And Krishna brought her to the spiritual world. Because despite the fact that she was trying to kill him, but she came to him like a mother. And so one small part was good and 99% was terrible. And Krishna took the one small part and saw that. So in a practical way, he killed her. But what he saw, that she's coming to me as a mother. And therefore he gave up a position in the spiritual world of mother, of the nurse, of Datri. And then Uddhava says, Kamba dayalam sharanam brajema, that who could serve a more wonderful master than that, who amidst the 99.9% fault, he sees the 0.001% good, and he rewards according to the good. He reciprocates according to the good. So, kamvada alum sharanam bhajema, who could sharanam bhajema, who could surrender to a more worthy person than Krishna? Who could give oneself? So this is what we have to discover in a deep way for us, for ourselves. We can accept what Uddhava says, we can accept what Krishna says, we can accept what Prabhupada says, we can accept what Mahaprabhu says, we can accept what the great acharya says. But if we're not able to just base our surrender on these great authorities, then we have to find out. We have to make our attempt to develop bhakti and see. Because if Krishna is actually going to protect us and care for us, otherwise we will not be able to surrender to him, and we will surrender to the things of this world, and they will not give us shelter. And that we may not know if Krishna is going to really care for us or take care of me, but we should really for sure know that the material world isn't going to care for us and give us shelter. What would it take in this material world for a shelter? To give us true security, what would it actually take? So we feel secure in the material world. It could only be illusion, because there is no security in the material world. It's impossible to be secure in the material world. It's impossible to be safe in the material world. We can just have the illusion of safety and security, but there cannot actually be safety and security, because everyone knows that in 100 years from now, most likely, not one of us will still be walking on this earth. Not one of us, not even the little ones, the smallest ones. None of us are going to be here. So where is the where are we going to look for security in this world? So that's certain. The negative part it's certain if one has even the slightest bit of intelligence. So we really need to put our energy into the positive, into developing our faith and our love for Krishna and deepening our surrender to Krishna. And then one can actually find what one is looking for. Because Krishna, again, Krishna is a person. And like all persons, he reciprocates according to how, just like if the people, your wife or your friend or your husband, they come home, you come home, they walk in the house in a room that you're there and they don't talk to you. They keep on doing what they're doing, one of your friends, they walk in, they don't talk to you. Then immediately, you get insulted. They don't talk to you, they don't acknowledge, what to speak of, be sweet to you, they don't even acknowledge that you exist. And then what do you do? What do we do? Because we're people, we act the same way usually, or we get angry. So remember that Krishna is a person. And on the other hand, if someone walks in the door and you treat them very nicely, just like when I walked in very kindly, when Avatar Prabhu said, we've been waiting a whole year or something like that, as if only 364 days left, 363, but still, just a few sweet words, a gesture is made. And then, and it does so much. So all we have to do is make some gestures to Krishna. Really, we want to love him fully. When one has developed love for Krishna, fully, when the relationship is completely natural, then everything is very, very simple when there is love. But until we reach that spontaneous platform, we have to learn what are the things to do, the gestures that we make that show Krishna that we want to turn to him, that we want to place him in the center. All we can do is make gestures to Krishna. So we should think about this. What can I do to please Krishna? How to let him know that I want to love him. And I remember in the early days of the movement, I don't know if the devotees still say it now, but we used to say, if you take one step to Krishna, then how many? 10, 1,000, 100? Some devotees say, if you like a high return, you say 1,000. If you're satisfied with 10, okay. But Krishna comes to us in that way. Yayatamam prapadyante. So this is what we should try to do. We should try to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. And then if we do that, then we'll be pleased. And if we, and then we'll find out again and again who will take care of us. If I take shelter of Krishna, who will take care of me? If I put my energy into pleasing Krishna, who will take care of me? This is the fear. Will I have my needs met? Because I have so many needs and so many lack. Sometimes we think I should just, first I'll get all my material situations sorted out and then I'll be able to take shelter of Krishna. But it doesn't work that way, because our material situation can never be sorted out. It's impossible, because the very nature of the material world is complex. And it's meant to teach us, the material world is meant to teach us that we can't be happy there. Even, sounds like there's some monsters in the background. What are they trying to teach us?
No need to worry. That's what they say.
Who says that?
Children.
What me worry?
When they play, no worry.
Why? Because they're confident. When a child is taken care of, when a child has the proper shelter, then they have security. They feel protected. And the best example of that is Prahlad Maharaj. And he was... funny thing, isn't it? His father was trying to kill him continuously, and he was in no anxiety. It's the most astounding thing. In the Bhagavatam, the first time you see, practically speaking, the first time you see a perfected devotee who's already protected. See how they go from playing to crying to playing to crying? Why does the child cry like that?
He doesn't like to be chastised.
Or chastised. I want to do this right now. And if the mother comes in, you're making too much noise or something like that, I want to make noise now. And if you try and stop me, if you thought I was making noise before, you'll find out what noise really is. They escalate. It's politics. It's power struggle. That's what goes on. Which means false ego. But Prahlad Maharaj, his shelter was so fixed in Krishna that his own father, who was the natural shelter, was trying to kill him. And he was in no anxiety. Just imagine how deep his shelter in Krishna was. How realized he was that his own father was trying to kill him. And he was in no anxiety. And when his father was confronted with the depth of Prahlad's shelter, his father got in anxiety and felt so threatened that he told Prahlad, "You're always saying that there is someone more strong than me, more powerful than me. You have a God who's better than I am." And Prahlad said, "Yes." "Well, where is he?" he said. And Prahlad said, "He's everywhere, Father." And then Hiranyakasipu said, "If he's everywhere, he's in this pillar. Is he in this pillar?" And Prahlad looked, and Lord Nrisimhadev looked out to reassure him. Which means that although Krishna is everywhere, he's still a person, because he was somewhere. Because with the material mind, if something is everywhere, then he's nowhere. But Krishna is inconceivably everywhere as a person. So then Hiranyakasipu said, if your God is there in this pillar, I'm going to kill him. And he pulled out his sword. And then, after I kill him or break the pillar, then I'm going to kill you. And Hiranyakasipu was powerful. And Prahlad was a little boy. He said, "I'm going to kill you." And he had his sword out. And then Hiranyakasipu struck the pillar with his fist to break it to pieces. And we know what happened. He was killed very easily by Lord Nrisimhadev. But Prahlad was in no anxiety. And if we want to be free from anxiety, and this is the message that we're talking about, we have to make our shelter somewhere other than the material world and nothing impersonal. We have to make our shelter that person. Kamvad dayalam sharanam vrajema. Not have to in the sense we don't have a choice, but have to in the sense that if we want to actually be sheltered, We have to place our shelter, our hope, our faith, our actions, our shelter in the right place. So this is not an easy thing to do, and it's not a superficial thing to do, because again, just imagine how deep Prahlad's shelter was, that he wasn't disturbed by the whole material world in the form of his father, you know, trying to make his whole life shelterless and full of anxiety. So his shelter was fixed. Did you want to say something? Or do you want to let me finish the sentence? Okay, then I will. Okay, go ahead.
It seems like when you say that the child play means that he is feeling very confident that the father is taking care of him. Practically, he's seeing that they take care of him. So I was thinking that Prahlad so constantly Shingadev reassuring him, I'm here, I'm protecting you. So therefore, because of this personal seeing, not just the old pervading seeing, then he had the full confidence to come practically laugh at the Lord Shingadev.
He would see, it's described in the Bhagavatam, that he would see Krishna everywhere. And sometimes he would laugh, and sometimes Krishna would disappear from his sight, and he would cry, and Krishna would come again, and he would laugh like a child. Yes. But how do you get to that position where you have, you're always with Krishna? That's what we want. If we want to get to the position where Krishna is always with us, we have to do our part of making the attempt to be always with Krishna, always try to please Krishna. Okay, thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Thank you very much.
Any questions or comments? You had a question?
Maybe it's just the definitions, the words, but it would call the material energy the external energy, but for actually it is still within Krishna's soul. So how come we call it external? Or is it just technical, or is it being thrown in that?
There's the Bahiranga Shakti, that's what it means, and the Antaranga Shakti, the internal energy and the external energy. So Antaranga Shakti means Krishna's activities, the energy that helps Krishna with his activities in the spiritual world. And external, outside of the realm of the spiritual world, are activities in the material world. Outside of Krishna's own personal activities, there are the activities of the material world that's outside the realm, because the outside is further away from than the inside, of course. So Krishna is close to the internal energy, and the external energy is far away from him. It cannot come near him, even like darkness cannot come before the sun. The darkness and the sunlight are incompatible together. So the external energy is like darkness. And where there's darkness, there's not light. And what's the cure for darkness? Is just put the light there. So we don't have to get rid of the darkness in another way. We don't have to get rid of the external energy in any way other than just keeping in the light always, keeping in the shelter of the internal energy. But that wasn't your question. Yeah. That's probably the best I can do with that. Yes, go on.
You said that we have to try to take shelter of Krishna. as much as we can.
Yes.
I personally am much more inclined to try to take shelter with the devotees that are around me, because I don't really understand what is to take shelter of Krishna. Is it the same thing, or because of the love of the devotees, it's much more easier to try to satisfy them.
What I was trying to say is we have to learn the art of taking shelter of Krishna. And what I was trying to do, although I didn't end up emphasizing it, was leave us all with something to think about, how to take shelter of Krishna, how to place Krishna in the center. And that's clearly one of the ways you take shelter of those who are closer to Krishna. Because what makes someone a devotee is that they're carrying more Krishna, Krishna's Kripa Shakti, Krishna's merciful aspect, mercy, energy of mercy. Yes, that's the same. So this is what we should think about. It gives us something to do with our mind that's very positive. How can I please Krishna? How can I get closer to Krishna? How can I take shelter of Krishna? What is the method? You know, what do I do? It gives us, if this question is actually burning in our heart, then we have something very good to talk to each other about too. You know, exchanging thoughts on that, how I can get, increase my advancement, my shelter, deepen my shelter. Because the material energy is very, it's cruel, it's heartless. You know, sometimes, you know, when life is difficult, you think, all right, I need a break. Just make it easy for a little while. And it doesn't get, just because you're feeling very bad or you burn yourself or something, or you have one disease, it's not like the material energy will say, oh, the poor fellow is suffering so much. It should be easy on him right now. It's not like that at all. The material energy is relentless. If a child touches fire, the laws of nature don't say, oh, he's only a child, let's not burn him. No, it's cruel. But the purpose of its cruelty is good. It's to turn us away from the material world. Not that we shouldn't deal with the material world, but we should keep internally, with the internal energy, with Krishna, with our shelter. Should make Krishna our shelter.
Sometimes I think that when I want to take shelter of Krishna, so it looks like sometimes it can be maybe a little more not too much giving respect or Krishna, if I don't think maybe a little small thing that for the art, or maybe it can be also a material desire. That, so it's better not to. Because many things it's tempted to Krishna, but maybe it's not, it can come out of material things, so it's better not to tell them.
Like, what do you mean, for example?
For example, that we want to ask him help in this thing or that thing.
What thing?
Even technical things.
Even?
Technical things.
How about when you're doing your service every day? Say if you distribute books, yes? Say if you're distributing books, how many hours a day? do go out and distribute books? Okay. So would that be in the realm of bothering him if for 6 hours a day you're praying, Krishna, let me serve you in this way? And do you think that's proper or improper? And depending on him instead of your own ability? Do you do that sometimes? Or try?
It's confusing me. What is the turn to Krishna? What not?
What would be an example of something you don't think you should turn to Krishna for help? Like you're brushing your teeth in the morning? What do you... What would be an example?
Even to distribute books, it can be out of fruitiveness.
Right. But that's not what we said, to turn to Krishna out of... to give you fruit. But you turn to Krishna to make your attempt pure as a servant, and do it as a servant, knowing that this will please him, because you want to get it clear in your mind while you're doing it. That's the first thing to straighten out in the mind. Why are you doing this? You're doing it so everyone will say, oh, you've collected so much money, or you're doing it because this book, like Prabhupada emphasized book distribution so much, so even though it's so difficult to confront the material energy like that, that he'll be pleased. And say your consciousness isn't that pure, and then you pray to Krishna to help you. And maybe when you're walking home after, maybe you don't have to say, now I depend on Krishna that I'm moving my left leg. Now I'm depending on Krishna, I'm moving my right leg. Please, Krishna, let me move my left. But you can also acknowledge, and it's really true, that if Krishna doesn't give you the ability to move your legs, you can't walk. Do you ever notice that you're walking somewhere and basically you say, you give in your mind, you say, go to the store, and then you start thinking about something else and you end up at the store. So how does this is Krishna, the legs just move, this is actually Krishna. And if Krishna takes away that ability, you can't do it. So at least acknowledge that you're dependent upon him for everything we're dependent on Krishna. Not just some things, everything.
Many times you pray for something material.
You say many times.
Many times I've been asking, praying for something that is material is you're doing actually the opposite.
Why do you pray for something material? Huh? But you remember to pray. So why pray for something material? Unless you want, do you want something material? Do you? Well, if you want it, then Krishna will give it to you, unless he's really kind. Do you get it when you ask? No. Why don't you turn to the demigods or something? I know someone who when I was in Japan in 1970, who was a young man, maybe 20 years old, and he made a discovery. And he started praying. He's a pious person. And he found out that whatever he would pray for, he would get. So he prayed for, I don't know what the first thing, because I met him then, and he told me he prayed for something, and it came. Then he prayed for a girlfriend, and the girlfriend came. And then he thought, what am I doing? I might as well pray for, as long as I'm getting whatever I want, I might as well ask for something really big. And he started praying to be a servant of God or something like that. And then he actually immediately met the devotees. But I once heard a funny little story. Not a story, it's more of a joke. This man was walking along a cliff, high, and suddenly he fell. And it was a drop 2,000 feet below, and there were jagged rocks. And as he was falling, he grabbed onto the root of a tree. Did I tell you this already? And he was just holding on and holding on, and he looked down and he saw the rocks. And the tree was starting, the root was starting to fall, and he was holding on. He said, "Oh, is there anyone up there? Oh, Lord, is there anyone up there? Please help me, please help me. Is there anyone up there?" He didn't. And then he heard a voice. "My son, just let go, and I shall protect you." He looked up and said, "Is there anyone else up there?" So it's a little like that sometimes. Not only do we want him to protect us, but we want to tell him exactly what he should do next. But that's, of course, he's not. He doesn't fulfill your material desires, right? He just gives you more trouble. Okay. Huh? That's why you don't pray to him. Why don't you change what you're praying for? That might that might be a better idea. You might do better. Did you want to ask something?
Sometimes it's frightening to trust.
Yeah, that's saying that. Is he really going to protect me? So, this is our life's mission. To combat that, and not run from that. No, it's rare that someone has faith like Prahlad, even in the most difficult, unnatural circumstances. He wasn't in anxiety because he was so confident of Krishna, his relationship with Krishna, and Krishna's relationship with him. So that doesn't come in a day or maybe even a life. But what else is worth achieving in this world except that type of fixed bhakti? So we work, we strive for that. Sometimes we say, "Krishna, protect me," or something, and then, okay, it's been 7 seconds already and he hasn't protected me. Is he really there? You know? Or sometimes we're like children, you know, we're crying 1 second, "Krishna, help me," and then we get distracted. You know, when a child's crying, the parents just go like this, and the child completely forgets what they're crying about, and they just become attracted over there. So if we have determination like a 2-year-old, nothing personal, Gopal. If we have determination like that, then Krishna, you know, he doesn't take us seriously what we're asking for. But he'll test you to see what you really want. Well, what do we really want? That's that point. We have to keep asking ourselves, well, what actually do I want? My material desires are frustrated. So do I really want the frustration to end so I have my material desires? Or I've turned to Krishna because my life has been frustrating. So do I want my life to be unfrustrating? Or do I want Krishna's shelter? What do I actually want? So Krishna will test us before he because why will he give us the ability to take shelter him fully unless we really want that? Why will he give the most valuable thing unless we really know the value of that thing? So we study the books and we live our life and we learn what is truly valuable to us. If we don't study, if we don't read, hear Shastra, and if we don't chant properly, we'll have a false thing as that which is valuable to us. We'll be misled by Maya. But if we keep in the association of devotees, follow the principles, and chant Hare Krishna, associate with devotees, and we'll proceed steadily, or we'll proceed anyway. Shishupala is different, and there's all histories behind them, these persons too. Shishupala, of course, is one of Jayavijaya, and Kamsa was a demon by the name of Kalanemi. You mean? Their situations are somewhat different, most of them, like Jai Vijay, they were in the spiritual world, but their consciousness was full of Krishna when they left this world, and that's so purifying. So they didn't have love for him in their lives, but at the time when they left this world, they were purified, like with Agasura. Krishna entered into Agasura, and by Krishna, associating with Krishna, he became purified. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, in the Sandarbhas it describes how only when Krishna kills a demon, they are liberated. But it's not with every incarnation even, it's only Krishna. And another point is that if Krishna wants to be especially merciful to a soul, we shouldn't think that he shouldn't be merciful. You understand what I mean? It's not fair.
It's not logical.
Yeah, mercy is not logical. It doesn't follow law. That's what mercy means. Rather, we should think, as Uddhava said, that the demons are more fortunate than I am. So please be merciful to me. I am trying to be your devotee. Rather, we should pray like that. Another way we can look at it is, understand that most of the demons he killed, they just got impersonal liberation, which isn't not very desired by a devotee. He'll merge into as he falls in. Any other? Is that right? No, he purifies them because they see him. Their minds are absorbed in him. And that absorption in Krishna is so purifying. When the consciousness becomes absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, it's so purifying. So at the time when they were leaving the world, this world, they were absorbed in thoughts of Krishna very intensely.
It's like it says, when you see Krishna, when you leave your body, then the soldiers, and they died.
That was a special benediction Krishna gave. Yeah. So if he's kind and being especially merciful, I once asked Prabhupada almost the same question. I said, the question was, say you at one time, at a moment you know that Krishna's, that you feel completely protected by Krishna and liberated from the material world, and then you forget. Yes, basically. So I asked Prabhupada, because I was sitting with him, and sometimes when you're sitting with Prabhupada, just the whole spiritual world seemed to be there. And sometimes your mind was even heavier than usual because it was holding on and fighting. So I asked Prabhupada, why is it that sometimes you're in the association of an exalted devotee, or your association, I can't remember what I said, and you feel liberated, and you're liberated, and other times you're just under the modes of nature. And he answered in a very simple way, saying, the intoxication of Maya is very strong. And the mind doesn't want to do this, because the mind's business is to keep us in the material world and hold on to material things. That's our whole process. But the best way to fight it is to become attracted to Krishna. Because if the mind becomes attracted to Krishna, then you have no problems. Because your mind will wander to Krishna. So how to get the mind attracted to Krishna? That's what we have to think about. How can I become attracted to Krishna? How can I surrender to Krishna? That's our life, and we're all in different situations. And how to live in our situation not an artificial way, that when it's time to leave this world, we only have one shelter, and that's Krishna, and that we're fully confident of that, because however deep we have our shelter is, our taking shelter of Krishna, it's tested every day, you know, in simple ways or in heavy ways, and ultimately it's tested at the time of death, because that time is terrifying, because we define terror before as all the things that we usually take shelter of, they prove to be false, not able to give us shelter, and then a terror enters the heart, literally. That's what happens. So what to speak of at the time of death, so we have to learn this art. That's what life is for, to learn the art of holding on to Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet. And that means removing the false ego, the false sense of independence from Krishna. We're not independent from Krishna. We're completely, at every moment, dependent upon him. For our breathing, for every step, for our ability to walk and talk and think and everything else, we're completely dependent on Krishna. We're not making our hearts beat right now, and yet each and every one of our hearts are beating. We're not, just imagine if you were responsible for breathing, if you took responsibility for your breathing. And one, you know, we're all a little spaced out, you know. Forget to breathe for a few, for 15 minutes or something. So we are already completely dependent on Krishna. So when that dependence on Krishna becomes all-pervading in our life and we become conscious of it, and then you add gratefulness, and then you're approaching having a relationship. There's a story in the final chapter of the 10th canto where Maharaj Prickett, who's soon to die, he asks Sukadeva Goswami, he has a doubt that my relatives, the Pandavas, my forefathers, they were such devotees of Krishna, but yet they experience so much difficulty their whole lives. So how could that be? So Sukadeva Goswami said, don't think that this is what's the opposite of a favor? Yeah. Huh? Don't think this is unfavorable. But actually, Harishya Tatanam Shanai, when Krishna is especially affectionate to someone, he takes away everything so that they have no other shelter but him. Just like as we go through our day, we're not even conscious of it, but we think. But when we're in one difficulty after the next, we don't usually think, oh Krishna, please help me. I have nothing but you. But I use my intelligence, I use my money, I use my charm, I use this, I use that to get what I want. Right? But when Krishna, when he's really kind, and those things are only there by Krishna's grace, so actually you're depending on him for them to work. So when Krishna is really kind, he makes your dependence on him direct, so that you know that it's only by Krishna's grace, it's only by his mercy, he is everything for me. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadan. Krishna is my mother, Krishna is my father, Krishna is the wealth of my life. He's everything to me. So when Krishna takes everything away from someone, it's to put him in that mood of complete dependence. And when one completely depends on Krishna, then Krishna completely protects such a soul. So he's taken away insignificant things to give himself to the devotee. So Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Prickett that, because Maharaj Prickett's about to die, you know, and he's wondering, you know, that will Krishna really protect me? Did he protect my forefathers, or did he give them trouble? So Sukadeva Goswami explained that actually that the superficial giving of trouble was actually the greatest favor. And the Pandavas understood that. And Kunti Devi fully understood that, because when they were... Yeah. Because when Krishna was leaving, she was praying for difficulties again. Because in those difficulties, Krishna was always there with them. And she preferred Krishna being there always, there sheltered every step, than to be in a free from difficulty situation. Because because her love for Krishna was so strong. That's all that she valued, to be with Krishna. Okay? So right now, we value so many things are important to us. But all those things will be taken away by time. That this is the way of the material world. Time crushes all those things. But time is Krishna. So as he takes everything from he'll take everything from each and every one of us in time. Any other time? Talking about time, it's late. What time are we supposed to stop?
8:30.
Okay. I just turned off the microphone. That'll end it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.